Welcome to the Mary Mack Show, where we will be talking about your feelings, experiences, and pain following the death of a loved one. This is Mary Mack of The Mary Mack Show. I have the great privilege of being with Delaina Pritchard today. She is the mother of Gavin Long. He was 25 when he died. No, excuse me, he was 24. Mm-hmm. And he was killed by fentanyl poisoning. And he has a loving family who was very excited to go down to his new home. He had recently been engaged and they were setting up a party to celebrate. And unfortunately, he died a few days before. I wanted to tell you about his family. So Delaina is married to Chris Pritchard and they have several siblings of Gavin's. Destiny, Island, Cassidy, Brinley, Albany, and young Beau, who he was very attached to. Beau is only 10. And so I am grateful for this opportunity to speak to this wonderful woman. She's been through an awful lot. Gavin died on August 31st, 2022. So it's only a year and a half. And that's very new, but she has thrown herself into helping those who come after her. And she is part of families supporting families in Oklahoma, and also Drug-Induced Homicide Foundation, which is based in Michigan, but has state chapters all around the country who are extremely active in getting justice against all these drug dealers that we will not let them just go by the wayside anymore. They don't get to just by. So right now, there is a court case that's going on regarding her son's death, and I'm hoping that she'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But I just wanted to say thank you very much for being here. Delaina, I appreciate your time, and also that she is a NICU respiratory therapist in Oklahoma, making sure that little preemie babies and those who have lung problems survive and thrive. So what a phenomenal profession, I must say.
I love it.
So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I'd love to hear more about Gavin's growing up years and your family life and what type of a person he was.
Okay. Well, Gavin was born September 4th, 1995 on Labor Day. Yes. And it was just me and his older sister, Destiny. And she thought that Gavin was her baby. I had to be careful because she would like try to carry him off. She thought Gavin was her baby. And they just had a very close relationship growing up. Whenever he was young, he played soccer, loved soccer. He played, he was in Boy Scouts. He was just a joy to be around. He was a happy kid. He made great grades. The teachers loved him. He was just so loving. He played T-ball and baseball, and I'll tell you one little story that's kind of funny. We had a dog. It was a German Shepherd. His name was Zeus. And him and Gavin were real close. He was probably about 8 years old. And that dog didn't want Gavin to leave. And he had to go play baseball. Now, his baseball game was 6 miles away. That dog ran all the way, jumped the fence, and ran all the way to the baseball field. And he was on third base with Gavin. And we were like, where'd the dog come from?
He how did he even know how to get there, right?
Oh, I was like, how does he? I don't know. It was crazy. I was like, anyway, but he loved animals. He always loved animals. And so even whenever we're older, or whenever he got older, he would either have a kid in his hand or an animal in his hand. He
Aww.
he's just a little lover. And what can I tell you about school? School he did great in. He wanted to be a forensic scientist for a long time. And so he took some extra college classes on the side, you know, to do that. He was a very good artist. He won tons of awards for his art,
Wow.
which I'm thankful that I kept a lot of it. Well, you know, like, so I can, like, he was talented. Like, he was like winning awards when he was like in 7th grade, you know, for his
My
artwork.
goodness.
Yeah, he was just really talented at it. And he liked to do it just for fun, you know. In high school, like I said, he was a good kid, but you know, he started hanging around. Like, we had a big house. We had like a 5-bedroom house, and upstairs was a huge game room. Well, Gavin's room was next to the game room, so all his friends would always want to come and hang out over at the house. Well, he got a little bit of the wrong crowds up there one day, and they started smoking weed, and so I had to take the doors off, you know, so because I was so upset with him. And that was the first time that I had ever caught him ever doing anything like that. And he was probably, well, he could drive, so he was 16 or so. And he always worked too. Like, he was working from a really young age. You know, he worked moving furniture, and he was always really good with his money. And but whenever I caught him, I didn't think at the time it was anything to be. I mean, I was upset, but I wasn't like I thought he was gonna run his whole life. I just thought it was a phase, you
Sure.
know, like he's just gonna outgrow it or whatever. And then whenever. So and he was respectful. He never smoked anything else in the house or around me anyway. And he knew I was upset about it because I wanted him to have a good job, you know. And at the time, that was before marijuana was legal here in Oklahoma, and they do drug testing everywhere. And I
Sure.
was like really on him because I was like, you have to be successful, you have to have a good job, and you're not going to be able to get it if you're smoking, you know. And so he ended up graduating from high school, and then he moved in with a girl, and they had already been dating for like a year and a half or whatever. So I wasn't opposed to him moving in with her. They actually had a house like a few blocks away from me, so I could see him, you know, quite frequently. But whenever he moved in with her, I think that they started partying a little too hard and getting into some more drug stuff. Of course, I didn't know any of this until years later when he finally confessed to me about what had happened and where it all started from. Because you never saw him like that. He was never an everyday user. He carried a job. He didn't look like a drug addict would look. And I didn't know at the time that he was completely an addict yet. You know, I don't know how all that works, but he started dabbling in it. Well, they ended up breaking up after about a year of them moving out. And that was probably the best thing he could have done at that time, because I think she was just really a negative influence, you know, as far as that. And so then he, like I said, he got clean for a long, he got clean again. He was doing great, just really pursuing what he wanted to do and working. And then and he moved out of town for a little while, and then I don't know when it was, but a few years before he passed away, he had moved back home with us because we had bought a place in the country, and we were like, we wouldn't mind having him come and help us a ranch hand. We had
Sure.
fenced put up. We had animals that needed to be fed. We had goats, we had cows, we had all the things, a horse and all that, and chickens. And he loved it out here. And I thought this was perfect for him because he's not around everybody,
Sure.
you know, and he, like, and he was happy. He was like happy to fix the fence. He learned. He, I would say he was a city boy turned or a city boy turned country, because he grew up in the city and came out here and he's building fence, driving the tractors, you know, he's doing all the things that he didn't get experience. So I think it was really fun and challenging for him, you know? And so he, when I look around our property, it's kind of a, I don't know. It's when I look around, he helped put the deck up out front. He helped take my other deck.
So many memories.
Yeah.
Bittersweet, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a lot of the work that we did around here was with the help of him. And now he's not here, and it's obvious he's not here, you know. He's not here to help us. But every time I look, so
it's okay, perfectly okay. Take your time.
It's just every little thing out here reminds me of him, you know, because he helped. He did something to help us, you know. And Gavin, this is kind of a funny thing for him to be a man. Gavin was very OCD. He was my cleaner from the time he was little. Clean everything. Everything was arranged the way he wanted it. So when he would come over here, I loved it because I knew my house was going to be clean when I got off work. Because he would have everything done. And so in saying that, my mom, she's, you know, she's had back surgery kind of gone wrong and is kind of disabled a little bit. And so Gavin asked if he could go, he wanted to go stay with them and kind of help her out to get her house more organized. And so he went over there and he was just, I mean, he would take care of them. Like when they had COVID, he would have them get up and go into the living room and clean their bedding and stuff. Like, I mean, what grown man does that? Yeah. You know, young, you know, like a 22-year-old man saying, here, let me clean your sheets for you. You know, he was just, he wanted to take care of them. And when he loved his grandma, so he definitely wanted to take care of her, you know. And he still would go to work or whatever he needed to do, but he just really wanted, he liked, he enjoyed being, I think he felt good about it because he knew he was needed, you know.
Yes.
And that was what he wanted. He was I don't know. He's just a good kid.
Very compassionate. And, very.
Yes. Yeah. He, I mean, humble. Like I said, he always liked that, just a lover and always looked out for everybody and wanted everyone to be happy. I need to backtrack a little bit and tell you kind of a little bit more about Gavin. When mm-hmm. Gavin was in school, we lost both of my brothers. We lost his uncle Denny, he was extremely close to, because my brother Denny was a single dad. And so I would take him and his two kids everywhere with our family, you know, all the vacations and all that. And he even stayed in our house for a little bit, like, you know, for about 8 months, I think, with the kids. And so Gavin and his uncle were extremely, we were all extremely close. Well, Denny passed away. And that was really hard on Gavin. But whenever he passed away, I was actually really sick in the hospital getting blood transfusions and stuff. And so I think that Gavin, he didn't act like upset, you know, like he didn't show his emotion, but I think he was trying to protect me because he knew I was sick and he knew that he didn't, you know, he just wanted to not talk about it and let, I don't know how to explain it. He didn't want me to see him upset because I was already burdened enough, I think, mm-hmm. you know, with the death of my brother and the stuff that I was dealing with health-wise. And then 6 months later, my oldest brother passed away. So he had experienced a lot of death. And I think that the smoking and the drugs is kind of what he was using to kind of cope, you know? And so I think that that was probably what started it, along with him being with the girl that wasn't the greatest influence. But I think that he had triggers right there, you know, from all that. And I think it was, yeah, I just think it was his way of trying to cope and not feel it,
And
you know?
self-medicate. You know,
Right.
when you're really in a bad way, a lot of people do that. They self-medicate with whatever they think they can tolerate.
Right. It was, yeah. I met Chris right before my eldest brother passed away. And so he didn't get to know Gavin from a little guy, you know. He got to know him older. But I think it was good for them to they for him to come live with us for a little bit so he could teach him how to be a man. Because I felt like Gavin just he needed that, you know, he needed somebody that was going to be strong and teach him and how to be a man of God and just do things the right way. And I don't know that my husband, Chris, knew at the time that he was such an influence on Gavin until later, you know, whenever he especially, well, I'll get into it in a little bit, but he was a real big influence. And I don't think he ever knew that, you know, that Gavin had so much respect for him. Anyway, I kind of lost my place. Oh, I was going to go back to Gavin and my mom. He had moved out, or he moved away from my mom's, but he would still go over there and help her, you know, from time to time. And so this is, I got a phone call from my mom that Gavin had was over there and that he was unresponsive and blue. This is when we found out that Gavin had a problem, you know, like a problem. I told her, being I'm in the medical field, I told her to administer Narcan. It sounded like a drug overdose. She actually had Narcan because she had some pain pills for her leg, her back. And so they had given her Narcan. So she had Narcan on hand and she administered 2 rounds of Narcan on him before IMSA got there. And it saved him that time. After that, that's when Gavin ended up going into the sober living home and staying there. So he went to the sober living home and he was getting all the spiritual and mental and emotional needs that, I mean, he was getting them all met there and they were getting him into counseling and they were doing some stuff with his medication because I didn't know that he was having nightmares. He had night terrors a lot, and I didn't know that. And so he, of course, like I said, I didn't know all this until a lot later, you know. But he was dealing with some stuff, and he just was a man and didn't talk to me about it. Didn't tell his mom all his struggles that he had going on. And so I was really happy when he was in the recoveries at the recovery center. He had gotten a job. Gavin could drive any piece of equipment you put him on. He's just quick, you know, like quick learner. He could do it, and so they would always want him to do it. You know, they're like, "Get on here." Well, at the time, Gavin was having some like health issues, and so he had to kind of step back away from that for a little bit, and then he ended up. I guess he had been in the program probably almost a year, but not quite where he couldn't graduate it yet. You know, he still needed to finish that out. But he went ahead and moved out from there. And I really wish he wouldn't have. I really wish he wouldn't have because there, I felt like he had so many eyes on him that he was expected to do good and he was doing good, you know? But I mean, when he did move out, that's whenever he met Jalen, his fiance that he got engaged to. And he was doing really well with them. They were working, they were just getting everything ready for their little life, you know. And then he told me that they got engaged and he was going to bring him over for the 4th of July. This is in 2022. And so we always had a big 4th of July celebration with all of our family and friends. And that's one thing about Gavin. Gavin loved celebrating with his family, anything, like any party, any holiday, he was there. Like he'll be the first one there. he was all about it. And we did, our family's so big that we do a lot of holidays and birthday parties and Christmases. And, you know, we just do these real big things because our family's so big. And he's always there. He's all about it. So he was excited to come because he wanted to introduce Daylin and her mom, Dana, to everybody. And he knew his sisters were going to be there. And his sister Destiny, at the time she had 4 kids, and he was real close with, he's very, very close. He was really close with his nephews and his niece. And so he was excited to show off, you know, the kids to Jalen and play with them. And because he hadn't seen him in a while, so he was super excited to be with them. And then his sister Eileen, at the time she had 3 kids, 3 boys, and so he was super, like, he's a little kid, you know, he's the fun uncle that spins him around and tickles him and, you know, plays games with him, and he just gets to be a little kid too, you know. And even his little brother Bo, that's what he was like that with him. He just would entertain him for hours. They might be playing video games or playing guns and war, who knows, but he would play just like a little kid. And so anyway, but he was excited to have Jalen and her mom meet everybody. And that was just such a special, special day. And it was the last time that I had a picture of all of us together. Oh. We have all the kids, and me and my husband are in it. And that was the last picture we ever took of all of us, and the only picture we'll ever have like that. Mm-hmm. So it's really precious to us. Just that moment in time, you know? So anyway, we had a good time. We got to meet Jalen and them, and we looked forward to planning something else. And Gavin's birthday was September 4th. So we were like, we'll go down and visit you guys this time, and you guys can show us your place. And he was so excited. He was like, what are we going to do? What are you going to bring? Are you going to fix it? Like, and he was like messaging me like every day. Like, I was like, but I'm at work. I'm like, I've got it. I promise. It'll be fun. Whatever we do, it'll be fun. You know? And he was so excited. And he's like, what do you get me for my birthday? I want these shoes. I want, you know, just like, I mean, he just acted like a little kid. And so I had actually ordered him some shoes and wrapped them. And then I was going to go down there and like help pay like one of their bills or something, you know, just to be grown up, you know, to help them. And so we were just really planning that. And all that changed. Now I didn't know at the time, but the weekend before his birthday, he had gone to the lake with Jalen, and somebody from his past was there. And that person had something on him. I don't know what it was, but it was in the glove box. And Gavin actually, I think what happened was the guy was ODing, and Gavin said, I know that guy. And so he got into that car to drive him to the hospital. Oh, and whenever he opened the glove box to get his ID or find his ID, there was drugs in it. And so Jalen said Gavin started shaking real bad, like whenever he saw it. So I think it just was like a huge trigger. And it probably scared him too, because here he is driving that guy's car because he's trying to get him to the hospital. And they've, you know what I mean? Just kind of like a lot. And so Gavin never told me anything about this. This is what I found out from Jalen later, what had happened. The next, Jalen said she had tried to talk to Gavin, and Gavin just got quiet on her. Now, Jalen was a good girl. She was innocent. She didn't know anything about any kind of drug life or anything like that. She was just she's just a good girl, just a home, you know, she just didn't know. And she was concerned because the way Gavin had started shaking and kind of got real quiet. And then, so she was talked to her mom about it. They didn't reach out to me. I wish they would have, but they didn't. They didn't know to, I guess. She talked to her mom about it, and her mom questioned Gavin, like, do you want to talk? Do you need anything? Like, is there anything we can do to help you? And he said, no, I just don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so Gavin, I got a phone call about 3 days later from Jaylen. I was at work, and she knew I was at work, and she never called me at work. And she sent me, well, first she texted me and said, Gavin hasn't showed up to pick me up from work, which was really unlike Gavin, because even if he was ever using in the past, he was always there. He wouldn't like just abandon somebody. He might make up an excuse, but he wouldn't just abandon you, mm-hmm. especially her. He adored her. And so I got concerned, you know, and I was like, where did he go? And she goes, well, he was supposed to go into Tulsa to go to the eye doctor. And I said, well, maybe call the eye doctor and see if he's still there, because sometimes they can get pretty busy, you know, trying to I didn't think, I wasn't super suspicious right that second. I just thought maybe he's running late. And then she ends up calling me. This is probably 30 minutes has gone by. He's still not there. She's now I can hear she's concerned, you know, in her voice too. And so I said, well, call the doctor's office and see if he made it to his appointment. You know, I was like, because what time was the appointment? She told me. And I said, call and see if he made it there. Right. And so she called and said, he never made it to the appointment. So now I'm getting worried. So I even called him off multiple different phones at work, even my friend's cell phone, just to see if he would pick up. Because I was like, well, maybe he's trying to avoid something or whatever. He never answered. So I'm texting him or calling him. Now I'm getting real worried, because I'm like, that's not like Gavin. Gavin would, he would respond. He would say something, even if it's, I don't know, something we didn't want to hear. He would say something. So then I was like, I got to leave. I left. I clocked out of work. And I told my people at work, I said, I got to go find my son. I can't find him. And I got a hold of my husband, and I was really worried. I was like, we can't find Gavin. He was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's at a friend's house or something, you know, maybe he lost track of time. And I was just like, but he's not answering. He's not responding to anything. It's not like him. Right. And so, I told my husband I was going to go drive around the parking lot. Now at this time I'm getting real upset. My heart is like feeling heavy. I'm like, something's wrong. Something bad is wrong. Something bad's wrong. And, so I drive and I start circling the parking lot, cause I felt like I had to find him. Like, he was calling for me and I didn't know where to go, but I felt him calling for me. Like, I have to find him. And my husband said, come on home, you know, just let's just try and relax, you know, just give him a little bit longer. He'll probably something's happened, you know, and he's probably just, you know, maybe his phone died or something, you know, like he's just trying to not have me so worried. And so then I got home and he said, my husband was like, just get in the hot tub and relax. I'll make you something to drink. Well, at this time, I'm getting worse. I'm getting panicky worse and worse.
Right.
And I get a hold of Jaylen, and she says, we're going to put out a missing persons, which was really hard to do because a grown man, they don't like to do that on.
Right.
You know, so it was took a lot of calling and effort.
Convincing.
You
know,
yes, because they did not want to do it. But then they ended up putting it out because they did it as like a health thing. Like, we're worried about his health. Like, we don't know what's happened. We didn't know if he was on the side of the road or, you know, we just didn't know. And so they put it out, and I told them that I was going to turn the data off his phone, so it would force him to make a call just in case he was like using the internet or sub like Snapchat or something like that. I was trying to do, you know, just try to force him to have to make a call, because I was following his AT&T account. You know, I could get in and log in and see, and I could see us all calling, but I couldn't see anything going out other than, you know what I mean? Like if it dings off the tower or whatever. Anyway, so they had filed that. I was in the hot tub and I just started bawling to my husband. I said, my son's dead. I know he is. I feel it in my heart that he's dead.
Wow.
And he was like, you can't say that. And I'm bawling. And I'm like, he's dead. I know he is. I feel him. And I'll never forget that. He had to tell me bye, you know? It just hurt so bad. And so we went inside, and yeah, my husband just held me, and I just cried myself to sleep. I didn't sleep very long, of course. I had to get up at 4 to go to work. So I get up at 4 and I take a shower, and I get a phone call from the sheriff was at my gate.
Oh, wow.
They said, and I told my husband, I said, the sheriff's here. He just told me my son's dead. And he goes, you don't know that. I said, I do. I know it. I feel it. And so he went out and opened the gate. And it was the Creek County Sheriff. And he said, your son's dead. And he told me that he was found in the parking lot. In his car, and that's really kind of all he said, because he wasn't the detective that found him. He just said that the detective would get in contact with us later that day to tell us exactly what happened or what they found.
And was this in the parking lot where he went to the eye doctor?
No, it was a restaurant parking lot. Found. It was actually where his drug dealer worked.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Then I had to tell the family, and that was devastating.
Sure.
I had to tell all his siblings and everybody. And I was so worried, Destiny, my daughter, because they were just so close. And I worried about little Bo, because he had to experience something like that so young. Anyway, I worried about everyone, I guess, you know, just it was hard. And my sister was here from Michigan. She just happened to be in town, and her and her daughters came over, and we were trying to decide what to do as far as a memorial service for him, because she had to leave to go back soon, and I didn't want to have anything without her. You know, I wanted her present. And so she ended up, so we ended up doing it really fast, because I was trying to do it while she was in town. You know, we just tried to get everything all together. All that. Everything's kind of a blur after that. My sister and them helped me. My mom's church helped arrange the memorial. We have a funeral home here in town that was so amazing. They were just such a blessing. We're like, don't worry about paying us right now. Just we're going to make this happen, you know, and you worry about that later. And that was a huge blessing to me, because when I lost my brothers, that was what they wanted up front, was the money, you know.
Right.
And that's hard, because you're not planning.
You're not prepared.
You're not prepared. And
especially when it's like a sudden death, you know.
Right. So they were just amazing with that. And Like I said, a lot of it's a blur, but we ended up having his service the day before his birthday. He was about to turn 25. That was the weekend we were supposed to be visiting him. So instead of that Saturday being there to celebrate his birthday and enjoy their new place, we're having his memorial. And that was hard. It was just hard. So, after Gavin passed away, I got a phone call from a news reporter. She said she wanted to talk, that she knew. Well, okay, hold on, let me backtrack. The detectives came over the day that Gavin passed away. The detectives, I won't say their names, but one was in the county that he passed away in, and one was from a different county. And they both came together because the one working the case, I didn't know about anything like this at the time. He had explained it to me, but he brought the other detective with him because he wanted to make sure he didn't miss any steps,
Okay.
and that everything was gonna, because he had never done a case like this before. It was like one of his first times, so he wanted to make sure that he was doing it the right way, and he basically asked a friend for help, is what he did.
Yeah.
And so when the detective came to the house, now mind you, I'm just thinking Gavin died of an overdose. I don't understand anything else. I didn't know anything else. Well, whenever they got to the house, they said, we think Gavin died from fentanyl. And I didn't know illicit fentanyl. I didn't know anything about illicit fentanyl. I was just like, I don't know what you're telling me, And they were like, we think that this is, and then they started to explain that in Oklahoma, that if your child dies from an overdose or poisoning, that they'll try the drug dealer. The drug
That's
dealer is going
great.
to be held accountable. And then he explained that that's why he brought the other detective, because they think that they have enough evidence to work the case, but they need to check all the evidence. Well, they needed more evidence to check. And so they asked if we had the password to Gavin's phone, and I actually had the password to Gavin's phone. And so they said that they were going to look into it, and I was like, absolutely, because I was angry and upset, but I wanted to know what happened. I wanted to know the whole story, because I was like, this is crazy, because he was doing wonderful, and then all of a sudden this, it just seems so, I didn't understand. I needed some clarity. And so they were able to get into Gavin's phone. I also printed him off phone records off my bill, the AT&T bill, so that they could track anything if it had been deleted or whatever, that they could find it. And so I gave him all that. And then and that was, at the time I didn't know, but that was like crucial. Like, if you're ever dealing with a fentanyl case, hand over your child's information. Don't be afraid to not give him the phone because you're going to be embarrassed or whatever. Hand it over. That's the only way they're going to be able to track down everything. Don't go through and delete everything. Be honest and open and give it to them, because it's going to benefit your child. It's death, Anyway, so we handed it over, and he said he would be back in contact with us. I didn't really, as at the time, I still didn't know what was really going on. I just handed him the phone. Well, then they end up arresting the guy that sold it to Gavin, that sold him the fentanyl. And they arrested him quick. It was like in a couple of days after we handed him, because they were able to work that case so fast. And that
With
was
the
another
phone, all the knowledge from the phone.
yes. And so they arrested him, and at the time they arrested him for trafficking. He had enough fentanyl to kill 5,000 people on him whenever they arrested him. So it was, that made it more important to get him off the street. And I still at the time did not know everything. And then a news reporter She reached out to me and said she wanted to talk. And this was after they had arrested the dealer. And she sent me a text and said, "I'm sorry that he left your son." And I was like, "What? What does that mean?" Because we didn't know that, because the detectives didn't tell us anything like that. Well, the news reporter had gone and interviewed, not the detective, but somebody, I don't remember who it was, like in their office or whatever. And he said that he told her that Gavin's body was, he was left for dead in his car by the drug dealer. And so I'm finding all this out from the news reporter, you know, and I'm just like, we didn't know any of this, you know, like, right. And she's like, "Oh my gosh, I'm sorry to tell you this, but now it's open to public," because she's already interviewed him on, you know, he's already, it's a public broadcast, you know, with the police officer, or he wasn't, I don't remember what his title was, but, so she did an interview with us, and she was just so sweet and caring and really wanted to help us with our cause, help us get justice for Gavin. And, actually, she is one of my very close news reporter friends now, because she will holler. She'll call us anytime that there's any kind of fentanyl thing going on and say, "Hey, do you have a mom to do, or, you know, that wants to talk about this?" Because she is an advocate for us.
That's wonderful. You know,
she's really good. We've actually got a few of them that I just adore, because they want to help us moms, you know? So she did the news interview, and in the news interview, that's when Family Support and Families, the group that I'm in Oklahoma, the one that started that group, Diane, reached out to me because of that news report. See, I didn't know anything about, I still am clueless about everything at this point, you know? And so she reached out to me and said, you know, told me about her daughter and that she had started this group, and she really thought that we might find comfort in it. And I'm telling you, that is my go-to. Those women are amazing. They have just helped me just deal with this in a positive way. You know, we're there for each other, but we're also there being advocates for our children. And we're trying to seek justice for our children. Mm-hmm. We're just helping each other along the way and educating others so that they don't have to deal with this. And we're trying to talk to the kids about it, because I didn't know about illicit fentanyl. So how can I expect a teenager to know?
Right.
You know, I didn't know. So how would they? So since then, it's been our mission to help spread awareness about fentanyl. Actually, through them, I've learned a lot about fentanyl, because I didn't know. I knew about fentanyl in the hospital. I didn't know about illicit fentanyl at all until we joined this group. And since then, we have gone out to, well, we kind of hit, we just, me and my husband joined the group, and we just jumped right in. To me, it was my therapy. You know, yes. It was, I was doing something in honor of my son and to help save others, because I knew that's what he wanted to do. Because, you know, he would say whenever he was in the sober living, he wanted to go talk to people and talk to the boys' home and talk to everyone, because he didn't want them to be like him, you know. And he would cry to me sometimes and be like, "I don't want to be an addict. I don't want to be like this," you know. And I was like, "I know." But at the time, I didn't understand addiction. But through our group, I've learned so much that I just, it's kind of upsetting, because I wish I could go back and change it and fix it, but I didn't know, you know. I was just clueless to a lot of stuff. And I'm not an ignorant person, you know. It's just, I just didn't know that side of life. I didn't think about it, I guess. I don't know. And I just thought, with addiction, especially, you know, in my mind, it was like, just stop, you know, just stop, you know, don't do it. That's all. Just say no. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand all the chemical imbalances in the brain that were happening once they become addicted. Yes. It's a lot more to it. You know, I didn't understand that part. And that's real upsetting to me. You know, it really is. because it wasn't that he didn't want to stop. You know, he wanted to stop. He just, it had control over him. And even though he could keep clean for a long, long time, an addict always has a trigger. They have all these triggers. And so if they're not getting the help that they need, it's easily for them to fall back and relapse. And I just didn't understand that. And I really didn't understand fentanyl. What I know now is that the reason that they're, you know, fentanyl's so cheap, this illicit fentanyl, that they put it in everything because they want addicts. The drug cartel wants addicts. They know that no matter what product they put it in, you're going to have a withdrawal within 12 hours. And so you're going to go back to them for more drugs. And
if
so it's just,
if you don't die first.
Right. But they're going to get, you know, you're right, because 7 out of 10 have the illicit fentanyl and enough to kill you now, especially. So we're trying to get out there and talk to schools and even at the events, and we pass out Narcan. Narcan education is a good thing too, because I knew about Narcan, of course, but I didn't know that in Oklahoma we can get it for free.
That's
and
wonderful.
So we make sure we take it to all of the events. We make sure now that the students and the counselors, well, at the schools, we tell them to talk to their counselors and their parents if they're going to need Narcan, but we have a way for them to access it, to get it shipped to their house for free. But we want them to have permission, or at least talk to a counselor if their family needs it. We go with the families group. We do, like I said, we go to schools, we do events, we do forums. We had a concert last year. We just do any way that we can to help get education out there about fentanyl and how dangerous it is and how it's being put in everything and how they're creating all these addicts and help to save somebody. That's what our life has become now. You know, that's what we do. It's what keeps us going. In the middle of all this, we are, like I said, they arrested the guy that sold Gavin the fentanyl. And Gavin was pure fentanyl what he got. And it was a lethal dose. Actually, more than one lethal dose, of course.
And it was a pill?
No, I don't think it was a pill. I think it was, I don't know that for sure, because we're still going through all the court part of it, you know. Mm-hmm. But they said, pure fentanyl. Well, when I got his autopsy back, it was pure fentanyl is what he had in his system. So, like, we are in the middle of the trial, or going to trial right now. His drug dealer did get charged with trafficking. And then we actually had court today where he picked up all the evidence against him, because they're charging him with first degree homicide, I think. Yeah. They're charging him with homicide. We were hoping he would take the plea deal, but I think we're going to go to trial. So it won't be anytime soon. It'll probably be like in the fall when we actually go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
But what everyone needs to know is that if you sell or give anyone something and they die, you can be held accountable for their death, you know. And We were super fortunate that our detectives have worked so hard on this case. Not everyone is coming out as lucky as we were, but I think with us being so open and honest and just opening the phone and you know, at the time you feel shamed, you feel ashamed, I guess,
mm-hmm.
but it's not even that. I'm not ashamed of my son, you know, I'm sad, you know, but I think some people feel a shame like on them. So they don't want to let everyone see all the true colors, you know, like with the phone and stuff. But I don't have anything to hide, and Gavin would want me to be honest, you know? And so I didn't hesitate at all when they asked for his phone or asked for anything. I'm like, have it all, because I need to know what happened.
Yes.
And I need to know it all. Even if it hurts my feelings, I have to know, you know. I know that Gavin didn't want to disappoint me, and he wouldn't have done anything deliberate to hurt us. Mm-hmm. I know that. And it's just so sad that it happened like this.
You could have never suspected.
No. Definitely not what I thought we'd be doing. That we'd be having grandbabies and weddings and all that.
Yeah.
No, it's just different.
I'm so sorry you're going through this.
Thanks for listening.
Absolutely.
And helping us spread awareness. And
it's really important, because for our audience who may, maybe this is the first time you're listening to this type of conversation about death by fentanyl, and you're really not sure how it may or may not affect you and your family. Well, I want you to listen very carefully to this. And if you have to re-listen to it, please do, because we don't want you to have to face what Delana is going through. I mean, she didn't expect this. She didn't suspect anything. Gavin was well on his way to a wonderful life with a new wife and a house and potential grandchildren for her. And it would have been just lovely. And unfortunately, one person who put enormous pressure on him ruined all of that. And so we're believing for an incredible, strong outcome to this. Because if you have enough pills on you or enough fentanyl on you to kill, did you say 5,000 people?
Yes.
5,000 people in one community. Think about that. They say now that there's enough fentanyl in the United States to kill every single person. Every person in America. How crazy is that? And we know that the justice system isn't as strong in many of the states. She is very fortunate being in Oklahoma that they have such strict laws. And people who came before her fought for that. And we're grateful to them. And there are some other states where people are fighting so that they have drug-induced homicide laws. So when a dealer is picked up, he's charged with murder, because that's what he did. That's what he did. He created the atmosphere for someone to be killed. And they need to be held accountable. They just do. We can't let this go. You know, there's so many laws that they just sideswipe. But this drug, this illicit fentanyl, is so powerful. It only takes a few little grams, a minute amount of grams, to kill you. Be aware. Please be aware. Listen to some of the other episodes of parents who are enduring this and how their children were killed, totally unknowing what they were taking, thinking they were taking one thing and it was completely counterfeit. And that's the difference. You know, people don't understand that what they're getting is not what they ordered. So if you go on Snapchat and you go to order, say, a Percocet because you have back pain, or a Xanax because you're anxious, you think you're getting that particular pure drug, and you're not. You're not getting anywhere near that. You're getting straight fentanyl. And the other thing is, one person might take the same exact batch, because there's no quality control here. So one person might get a pill that is all fentanyl and the other person got a pill that had no fentanyl. And it's just disgusting. It's more than that, it's horrific. I'm grateful that you took the time to be with me tonight, Elena.
Thanks. Thanks for having
us. Absolutely. And I hope you will keep us updated on the case. I'd really like to know how this all comes together.
Okay.
Okay.
Bless all right.
you. Bless you for being here.
Thank you.
Bye.